Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight, number 349 for comics originally released on April 16th, 2014. Now, starting us off in DC, is Sinestro number 1. Now, unless I've lost track, which is entirely possible, I believe just about every Lantern Corps that is active right now, except for the Indigo Tribe, is featured in a monthly book. This, of course, gives us the Yellow Lanterns with Sinestro himself. We still have, for another issue or two, Larfleeze for the Orange Lantern. We've got, obviously, Green Lantern with its own book. You could argue that Green Lantern New Guardians is covering both Star Sapphire of the I guess that's the Violet ones or whatever, and Kyle, the White one. And the Blue Lanterns aren't currently active. The Red Lanterns have their own book. So I think they've pretty well franchised this part of the universe out.
Yeah, they have really diversified.
This, out of all those books, seems to make a lot of sense. Because, I mean, Sinestro is something, if you're familiar with Green Lantern, hell, even if just from the movies, you're familiar with the character. And he's got a strongly defined character, a clear sense of self, purpose, and is decisive kind of a character, if you know what I mean. It's not one you're going to confuse with just somebody else. And I think that was one of the fallacies of Red Lanterns, where you've got a bunch of new characters, they're all united with the same power set and look, and for the most part, it's kind of a who cares. So I think giving Sinestro versus the Yellow Lanterns a book made sense, and I thought this issue did a good job setting up the character, the changes to his status quo that really justified starting this title this way now. I mean, do you kind of agree with all that? Disagree? What do you think?
It wasn't as accessible as I would have liked. The last Sinestro thing I read was probably he was featured in Villain Month, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, that might have been it. And you know, the occasional stuff in he pops in Injustice now. He's in there now. But I don't have a lot of history with him. But I thought I knew him enough. But there's a lot in here that he just kind of isn't as clear as I would like. I wasn't really following the connection, like what's the girl that has writing all over her, you know. I wasn't really getting her deal, and it seemed to move like pretty quickly, just along the top, because I think it just assumes that you're good. There was a lot of cool stuff in here to look at, and I really liked, you know, like when she grabs him and pulls him into her for the ring and everything. That was really neat. And there's, you know, when the actual search for others like him, that was kind of compelling. But I didn't think there was, I thought it was kind of muddled. Well, kind of like my last 2 minutes. It was kind of muddled, so I didn't think it did a really good job of saying, this is a new book, this is a new person I want you to get behind. I want you to, you know, rally around this character and follow him on adventures. I didn't feel that.
Well, let's talk about that a little, because I think the difference here is I've been reading Green Lantern since like the early 80s. You know, I grew up on this character with the Super Friends, you know, and in the comics and all that stuff. So I've got a long-standing attachment and awareness to Sinestro. I'm guessing from what you're saying that you did not read the Sinestro Corps War or some of the early Geoff Johns era of Green Lantern.
No, I didn't. I mean, I've dipped in and out of Green Lantern, and I don't remember a lot of time being spent around him. So, you know, I've missed those arcs, or back when I was reading Green Lantern, you know, he was hanging out with Green Arrow a lot, so there wasn't a lot of Sinestro back then.
In the New 52, the character that started the title was Sinestro. Or was that the previous run of that? He was the title character in Green Lantern for a while.
Yeah, I'm talking pre-New 52.
Yeah. So if you haven't read some of the Sinestro Corps War and some of the things that led up to Blackest Night over those previous years, I can see where you're coming in a little bit out of the loop on things. the character that's serving the purpose of heavy exposition here is, I believe it's Larissa Dark. She was a forerunner of Shadowlass, same race, but current day versus in the Legion of Superheroes. Lissa Drack, my mistake, I was so close. She was the keeper of the history, the lore, the book of the core, and I mean that literally, and they did a lot of backup features, short stories, where she would be, you know, just kind of learning about the history of either Sinestro or other characters. So to bring her back in this way is definitely a callback to all of that, yet definitely having, you know, changed the character in the intervening time, and plus with the whole, you know, reboot of the entire universe. So I can see if you don't have an awareness of who she is or a built-in attachment to Sinestro coming in, yeah, that is something that leads to a very different take on how much you enjoy the book. You know, I think a lot of people know of Sinestro. I know a lot more about him than you do, so I can definitely see where, like I said, that colored our opinions some.
Yeah, I think that's probably where I come down. I know more of him than know him inside and out. And he is usually a minor character in the books that I've read, and he comes in and plays a, you know, his character is more supporting and plays his role that way. And this is a lot of Sinestro, an awful lot of Sinestro. And
well, he is the title character. It's fair for him to get a lot of screen time.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So it's just a different angle that we're coming from, and. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just didn't work for me.
Interesting. How much of that was because of lack of familiarity of the character versus what I thought was not a strength of this issue, and that was the amount of just sheer exposition we got?
Yeah, there was a ton of that in the beginning. It just went on and on and on, and that's where I felt the muddled stuff was. Mm-hmm. And then once, you know, we get about halfway and they're actually moving and showing me things, I'm getting to see, you know, I see him look through the glass at someone from his planet, you know, and you see him experiencing that and feeling that loss and stuff. And you can kind of, at that point, you can start to root for him. You can start mm-hmm. to side with him. But just the base coat of stuff at the beginning to get you to there, it was tough. It was tough slogging, I think.
Interesting. Again, I thought it was exposition heavy, but I like the character, so again, that was coloring my perception. I thought they covered a lot of ground in, like I said, set things up and gave, at least to me, a pretty good sense of the nature of this title to where I think I can make an informed decision about where it's going, where it's heading, and what's the narrative thrust of it going to be. Did you get that, or because you were coming in with less baggage, really, pro or con, you know what I mean? It doesn't sound like you're going to stick with this title.
No, I won't. I'm not really sure actually where this book is going to go. It because of we got some different things in here at the end. You know, the final panel with the big reveal of that character and what her relationship with Sinestro is, and then we have his clash with the Yellow Core, and what is that going to dominate the issues, or is it going to be him finding all his people scattered across the universe that are left? Those three things equally could be the driving force in the book from now on, right?
I was expecting the reveal at the end to basically be kind of the first story arc, the rebuilding of his people to be one of the ongoing themes and threads, and then the how does this core, you know, position itself in light of the, pardon the pun, the Red Core, the Green Lantern Core, etc., is again one of the ongoing story elements that will lead to various crossovers. So I didn't see them as competing so much as different threads allowing them to kind of shift gears as they need to. But I could be wildly mistaken on all of that. Who knows?
I think people that like Green Lantern and the Green Lantern family of books are going to love this.
It worked well for me. I mean, to me, this was a solid 4 out of 5. Colin Bunn, I thought, did a good job on the writing. Again, exposition heavy, but they covered enough ground on the first issue to set some stuff up. Dale Eaglesham, I mean, he's just a great artist, so hard to go wrong with him.
With me, it's closer to a low 3, and the art is really, really fine art. It's some of the pieces in here are really impressive, and you know, I'm still reading Larfleeze, and it's kind of gone downhill since its debut, but you know, I'm still reading that, and then I still read the main Green Lantern title. So I'm not totally outside of Green Lantern now, mm-hmm. but if I was to lose either one of those titles, and it's possible that I will, I mean, I would.
I'm pretty sure Larfleeze is ending within another issue or two.
Yeah, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. And but you know, so I have a tenuous connection to the Green Lantern family of books, but I'm not all in. And okay. You know, I tried the Red Lanterns when we did the double-sided book, mm-hmm. and I thought that was really good. And but I don't think I picked up that following up issue. I'm pretty sure I did.
How about the issues of Supergirl?
No, I know I didn't do that.
Okay, so they got you to sample the story, which is as much as they could ask for over there. It just didn't pull you all the way in. This was another opportunity to kind of get you into that part of the DC, you know, area with the Green Lantern franchise, and it sounds like they failed to hook you there too.
But I do remember fondly enjoying. I remember the Villain Month issue of Sinestro being a strong one,
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of what why I was going into this thing. And yeah, that was pretty good, so I should give this a shot. But it's just not me.
Okay, you gave it a fair shake. That's all any creator can ask. I think that's totally reasonable. Not every comic is for everybody, nor should it be. That having been said, shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Sure.
This is Superior Spider-Man number 31. This is the series finale. And it's just amazing to me. Again, pardon the pun, I'm not trying to do that. The words just spill out that way. How much they've done in the last 30 issues of this title. They have taken the character of Spider-Man, redefined it in many ways, told a lot of great stories, built up a lot of, you know, what will happen when, and I guess at this point we're, I don't think it's any huge surprise to people, so maybe this is, not maybe, this is a spoiler, but I think we gotta kinda go into this. When Peter Parker comes back, certain things have to happen. A lot of that, not a lot, but much of it starts to happen here. And this is as much an Amazing Spider-Man Zero issue as anything else.
Yeah.
But doing it as the final issue of Superior Spider-Man was indeed the right move. And, I mean, I didn't count how many pages there were, but man, I mean, yes, this was a $5.99 book, but it had just a ton of story, a ton of pages, and not only did I love the lead feature, but man, that kind of epilogue story really acted as a nice end cap for this series.
Yeah, I mean, they threw 10 pages of Silver Surfer in there, but besides that, it was still a double-sized. Yeah, it was still a double-sized book. So you got like 44 pages of Spider-Man story, so really solid. And you know, the cover is really great too, because the cover captures all the covers from the previous 30 issues in little fragments of glass on the mm-hmm. cover. Very cool, very inventive. The art's strong. This story is really great, and you said it just right, because this is, it's like an Amazing Spider-Man Zero issue, and Doc Ock's not even in here,
which is surprising, and yet it's still very much about the Superior Spider-Man, but now the ramifications thereof. And I just really enjoyed where, in so many ways, it's like all the stuff that they had been setting up is really, at this point, we've shifted gears, we're gonna start getting payoff on that, and another status quo change. Peter can't go back to the way things used to be, for just so many reasons. And there were a couple of things that I was expecting, particularly the way the story opened, with Doc Ock's girlfriend, Anna Maria, on the tower roof with the Green Goblin. And I'm like, you know, that really reminds me of the whole Gwen Stacy death and all that. And it's like, are they gonna do that? And how's that gonna play out? And they gave that scene payoff. They went in an unexpected direction. It worked. And it left the lead story on a note that really sets up so much story potential. You know, things are in a position where Peter Parker has no easy out. I mean, the whole Parker luck thing has always been a little bit of a cliche in some respects. But now, because of things that Doc Ock has done in his body in this series, there's so many situations that Peter's going to find himself in and try to get out of. It's just, I'm really looking forward to where the Amazing Spider-Man title goes.
And emotionally, you know, your heart breaks for Anna Maria,
mm-hmm.
'cause you know what's coming. She's clearly head over heels in love with Doc Ock as Peter, and he's he's realizing it now too, and we just barely scratched the surface of what that letdown's going to be. But you can just see it's going to be devastating for both parties, probably. So stuff like that, you just get a little sense. The thing with Mary Jane and her new boyfriend, her new life, her old life, you know, that was really, there was really some good emotional bits in here.
Yeah.
It is not a perfect comic. I have a bit of a nitpick with about two or three pages from the end. Spidey has the Green Goblin in custody. Liz Allen, I believe her name is.
Yeah.
Turns on the Spidey Sense jammer. And off, and that's all it takes, you know, it's for a split second, that's all it takes for the Green Goblin to disappear into the crowd with Spidey 29 standing right next to him.
And yeah, Spidey 29 just standing there doing nothing. It's like, ooh. Yeah.
And then not only did she help the Green Goblin get away, but then Peter, albeit confused because of the situation that he's thrown Russ back in, but he doesn't do anything about it. Says, I'm going to keep an eye on her down the road. And that was kind of awkward. There was two or three panels that all that happened in. And it was the most awkward set of panels in this whole book. And it was weird, I thought.
But it touches on something that bothered me a little with this, is there were a couple of places where Peter's like, I don't know what's been going on. Yes, I'm back, but he had taken over my body. And I had thought Peter had a better sense of what was going on, but was just powerless to do anything about it. Now, I think some of the whole, you know, him almost getting wiped out, having to hide in Doc Ock's memory, all that kind of stuff, plays into this, but it felt a little odd.
Yeah. And I would agree with you on that, because I think if we go back and look at these issue by issue, there are times when Peter is seeing what Doc is seeing,
mm-hmm.
and knows what's happening, but can't do anything about it. And then there are other times where Peter is hidden in the consciousness somewhere, just hanging out with the memories. But I think what you said is correct. I thought that he was able to see what Doc Ock was doing through his eyes.
If nothing else, when he kind of went full circle to come back in the last issue or two, and then from Doc's perspective, saw Peter's life flash before his eyes, and then kind of rode through that as if he were Doc taking back over the body or whatever, he should have gotten the rest of the memories at that point.
Yeah.
But it's narratively a little bit better this way, because it allows him to walk into situations completely unprepared and just get, you know, blindsided. And there's a lot of great story potential there. So between that, one or two of the other things that I felt were just kind of that's a little odd that happened. Again, they're setting things up. They're trying to reposition a lot of things in this issue. It wasn't a perfect book for me. It was close. I certainly considered giving it the 5 out of 5, but it wasn't quite there. They did a stellar job. There's nothing they should be ashamed of. This, I think, is a definitive Spider-Man run in many respects, even if it's not a definitive, amazing Spider-Man run.
Yeah, I almost gave it the Lifetime Achievement Award, 5 out of 5. And, it's a $6 book, and I have some problems with it enough to give it a high 4. And it's still great. Great capper to a great series. And this is the only twice shipping, double shipping book that I read. Usually I find them to be they're not as strong. You know, you're not getting as much story because they're having to crank out 2 a month, you know? And I'm pretty sure this might be the only one. I think I've dropped all the Avengers that are double shipping and X books that are double shipping. I don't think I get any of those.
It's funny you phrase it that you think you don't get as much story because they have to ship it twice as a month.
I don't think I get the value for my money.
And I agree with that. I was just thinking the order of those statements. I'm thinking they have to ship it twice a month because we don't get much story.
Yeah.
Which but is this, the cost, this one which I is don't the effect.
Think, and I don't think this falls into that category. I think this, even though it's a double shipping book, each issue I get the value from.
Yeah.
This whole run of 31, there were a couple 2099 centric issues, Spidey 2099 centric issues that I didn't care for.
But this even sets up his series.
Yeah, it does. This is really a solid run of Spidey.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm looking forward to where they go next with Amazing Spider-Man and such. They covered a lot of ground here. I really, yes, it's almost $6, but I didn't, other than the Silver Surfer promo stuff at the end, I didn't feel there was any filler or wasted space or whatever. It was really good. And if they can keep up the story momentum and the excitement, the interest and such with the relaunch of Amazing Spider-Man, and I think they can, then we're in for a really good run there for a while, too.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see, obviously, Amazing number one will be our top book next month in sales. I'm anxious to see if the second issue, well, that would be come out on that would be on the same chart, won't it?
Do you mean issue number 2 or issue 1.1? Which do you consider the second issue? I mean, it's getting to where I think you need a math degree to figure this out.
Okay, when this shakes out and it's coming out regularly, is Amazing going to be on top of Batman, do you think?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It's got a chance, but
cuz Superior was already a top 10 book. And now, didn't you say 600,000 were the numbers?
I was hearing half a million.
Okay.
But I don't know if that's worldwide. I don't know what it is.
That's a big number.
It's a big number, but you look at how...
And with attrition, that's a big number.
True, true. But you look at how this title had been doing. Yeah, it's a top 10, but, you know, by and large, it was doing around the 75 to 80,000 mark. So even if you bump that up 10 or 15, it's still well below how Batman's doing right now. So I think it's got a chance, but I think it's far from certain. Yes, it'll come out with a huge number one. It'll drop by probably, 40% with the next issue, down to the third issue doing at best maybe about half what the first issue did. And then from there, we'll see. I mean, the higher the high point on the number one, the steeper the drop. So really, I mean, that's more an average type thing for a Marvel book these days. Realistically, if it does anywhere close to the half million mark, it's going to drop by 70, 80% on the second issue, another probably 10, 20% on the next issue maybe, and fall, I think, quickly below the 100,000 mark, probably closer to the 80,000 mark by the third or fourth issue.
Okay. that's not going to cause Batman any restless nights, then.
I don't think so, but, you know, who knows? We'll find out. Maybe there are a lot of people who had just not been reading Superior because it wasn't Peter, and they flock back to the title in droves.
Are we going to get Walking Dead 126 in the same sales cycle as the Amazing number one?
Because that's going to be a big... so, but Amazing, I think, comes out on the 30th, which means it's just got one week worth of sales.
Ah, okay.
So we may see, depending how it does, reorder activity the following month for Amazing.
Interesting. That'll be good to see. Great book, great series, though.
Yeah, definitely worth checking out. Shall we move on?
Yeah, let's move on to Translucid.
This is one of six. It's from Boom Studios. And this was one that I thought I'd only pre-ordered the first issue. Turns out I'd pre-ordered the second. I realized this morning, actually. We're recording this early on Tuesday, and this morning I actually had to send in my DCBS order. And I'm like, ooh, I better finish that up. And this is one I had to make a decision on. And frankly, the fact that I had already pre-ordered the second issue out of six was almost a deciding factor. I liked aspects of this issue, but I will be honest, I was a little confused by the end of this issue.
Yeah, there's plenty of... There are some cool characters in here. The horse is a very cool character.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very, really interesting dynamic between him and the hero. But my God, it is impenetrable at times, I thought. And what is going on? And then there's some clarity as it progresses, but... It's a strange book. Strange book.
Well, and it's one that's written, I think, for the trade, and it's a 6-issue miniseries. All right, fine. That's what they want to do. Can't necessarily fault them for that. If somebody reads it as a trade, they'll be reading all 6 in a single shot. I'm not. I'm reading them as they come out. And there were aspects of this where we're focusing on a kid, then we're focusing on the horse, then we're getting the navigator, then we're getting the kid, then we're getting both, we're bouncing back and forth, and... we're going to get into some story stuff. This is definitely going to be spoilery, but I don't know how to discuss this issue without doing so.
Who is the kid?
That was going to be my question to you. Is he the horse or is he the navigator? From the first page, I'm thinking he's the horse because, you know, we get clear indications there. But then the next time we see him, he's like putting together a utility belt, and then we get to the Navigator having a utility belt, and I'm like, maybe he's the Navigator. And then the part that really did it for me is we got some great stuff, relationship between these characters, who are some of the other like villains involved, what's going on. And it put an interesting spin on the hero-villain relationship aspect. But when we get from right before the last page, the two-page spread where the horse is clicking the trigger and blowing up the building, we get captions, and two of them in particular. After all, heroes can't turn back time. Only villains can do that. Flip the page, bam, we're back at the boy. He's saying from one nightmare to another. At which point I'm thinking, was he the horse? Is he now the Navigator? Is he both characters somehow? Did somebody travel in time? Is this a flashback? I'm not sure. And I think there are multiple legitimate reads of this issue of the boy being the Navigator, the boy being the horse. In both cases, no time travel involved. Another read where time travel is definitely involved. It's much less clear which character he is. And all of those lead to very different stories moving forward. I'm not sure what story I'm reading.
But it's still an interesting story, I think. Even though it's confusing in places, it's definitely new ground. And you recognize some, you definitely recognize like a Batman-Joker relationship here. But other than that, I think the horse is a unique character.
Yes. Strong visual, too.
Strong visual. And that's something new that I haven't seen. And so that's enough almost to make me read issue two. Now, the good guy is the Navigator, is that what we call
the
him?
Navigator, yeah.
Why do I think? He looks like Dr. Doom, and we don't get as close to him. And so his issue is next issue, to kind of flesh him out a little bit more. But there's some unique, interesting stuff in here that I cannot wholeheartedly endorse you buying this book to read, but it's different.
It is, and different is in a good way, I think. I think the way some of the story was told was very effective and interesting. Again, there are parts that left me thoroughly confused, and it was one of those where I looked at, you know, had I ordered the second issue? And I'll be honest, if I had not ordered the second issue, I don't know that I liked this enough to have gone back and ordered the second issue, pre-ordered the third issue, and kept going with it.
Yeah.
The fact that I was already in for essentially a third of the series had to make a decision that would put me half in. It's like, okay, at this point, I'll write it out. I'm curious. But if I was tighter on what gets onto my reading list, I don't think this would have made it.
Yeah. And I don't know. I was hoping you could convince me to stick with this or not stick with this, and I don't know. There's a little kernel of something there.
Yeah. There's a lot of potential here, and I think mm-hmm. the second issue is going to be very revealing
yes.
as to what story we really are reading. I just want that out of a first issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, how much risk should I take on this to determine if it's something I'm interested in or not?
I guess if you're the creator and you know you're telling this 6-part series and you're telling it for the trade, you know, I guess it doesn't matter what your single issue sales are. If you're comfortable and you know you're going to get to the trade, then I guess it doesn't matter. But as a standalone issue one, it's impenetrable at times.
Well, and that's the thing is this was a standalone issue one.
Right.
How it reads as a trade is really months away from being relevant. A couple of weeks back, we talked about, I mentioned briefly, Worth from the Roddenberry stuff about the guy who was had cybernetic or mechanopathy powers, mm-hmm. could deal with machines but not computers. That came out as a hardcover. I got the full story at once. I liked it. Had I gotten it serialized out in monthly installments, I might not have. I might have said, well, you know, this first issue didn't hook me. That's it. I'm done. How the story gets packaged does matter in terms of return on investment. Can you keep the reader engaged and things like that? And it would not have taken much for this issue to have been either weak enough that I'm like, you know, yeah, I ordered the second issue, but I'm not going any further, or strong enough to say, you know, I hadn't ordered it. I definitely should. But it didn't move the needle far enough in either direction for me to make that decision. And I don't expect everything to be spelled out in the first issue. I don't want everything to be spelled out in the first issue, but I want to come out of the first issue feeling like I can make an informed decision on the title. I didn't get that with this. So for me, this it's a 3 out of 5, and how I feel about the series overall, it could wind up being a 1 or a 5. I don't know. I don't like the fact that I don't know.
Yeah, it's a 3, but it could be a 2. It could just as easily have been a 2, and depending on how the next issue is, it definitely could be a 4, but I'm giving it a 3 just because I really like the horse, and I thought he was a really interesting character, the best thing about the book, and I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to read the next one or not. I kind of think I will.
I've pre-ordered it, so I will, but it frustrates me that I feel I need a little bit more of the story to determine how I really ought to rate this. It felt incomplete in so much as if those 2 caption boxes had almost any other content, if there had been no mention of time travel, yeah, I'd have had a different take on the book, frankly. It's a little amazing how much one line of text really spun the book for me, and not in a good way.
Yeah, and not really knowing who that kid is drives me batty.
Well, and it could be somebody completely unrelated. It may not even be a flashback.
That would be even worse if it's neither one of our main characters.
Yeah. For all we know, it's the dad in that last scene. That's the navigator or the horse or something. I don't know. So this should all become clear within, if not the next issue, the next couple. So we'll see where it goes.
Definitely for any Coheed and Cambria fans, go ahead, pick that up. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. I'm trying to think who else would like this book.
Well, people who like stories that are not as straightforward or spelled out, some that have some mystery as to what story is being told. Some people eat that up, and that's great.
There's a lot of you don't know what this is all about, which is, there's a mystery there. It's true.
And again, that's great for some people. For me, it wasn't what I was looking for when I read that issue. You know, if the story may grow on me in future issues, it may not. To me, it's not that it's bad. It's that I left it unclear as to whether I should keep going with it or not. And that, to me, is not something I like. Now, speaking of things looking forward and such, I got a couple of emails this afternoon about Hawkeye. And I'm assuming you don't know this news, so I'll tell it to you and see what you think. They were from DCBS. Apparently issues 19, 20, and 21 have all gone from $2.99 to
$3.99. What?
So it's like, do you want it on time? Do you want it good? Or do you want it at a higher price? I just have this image of Jeremy Renner, who plays Hawkeye in the movies, just doing like a PSA thing, pleading with Marvel to get their act together on this title, or he's never going to get a solo movie of his own.
Why would you not set that in the next round of solicits? Would you go retroactively and raise the...
On 3 consecutive issues, including one which was just the order I placed again this morning.
And ones that are already in the can.
Yeah.
I haven't got that email yet. I haven't checked in a while, but when did you get this? Just recently?
Just like in the last hour or two, just before we started recording.
Well, they are just poking me, aren't they? They're giving me every chance in the world to jump off this. Excuse I would need.
There are some titles, it's like, you know, if Walking Dead were to do that, and Robert Kirkman, please don't. I like the price the way it is in The Walking Dead. But he's telling a good story. He's got some momentum. I don't think it'd be, you know, a huge... you know, fiasco or anything, but Hawkeye really doesn't have any goodwill to speak of to a large degree to cash in for this. You know, they're late, they're shipping out of order, they're doing fill-in issues. This is just a intriguing decision for somebody to have made, thinking that this, oh, they love the book. With stuff like this, why? Why? I mean, that...
And did somebody in marketing or accounting say, you know what, we forgot to raise the price of Hawkeye. It's still $2.99. Did they just realize it? And they're going to retroactively fix it? Why would you go back and do this? This makes no sense.
Presumably because they had to. There was no mention in the emails of extra pages, extra content, or anything of the sort. I think that they may be at a point where, again, I haven't looked at how it's selling. Let me pull that up real quick. But, I mean, unless sales are kind of tanking there.
35,000.
Oh, you're faster than I am.
Hmm.
It's going down a little, but not to the point where I would say raise the price.
Yeah, if it is going down, is adding an extra dollar to the cost going to help sales? Or I don't know.
Or accelerate the downturn.
You know, I'm assuming DCBS gives you the option of canceling your order.
They didn't mention it on these particular emails. In times in the past, they have. For that next issue, though, when does that one ship?
Yeah, the order cutoff is tomorrow for DCBS.
Well, for DCBS, this impacted the order I placed in the two previous issues. So the question I have is, when does that next issue 19 or whatever, when does that ship? How much lead time do they have? I mean, could they get cancellations back in time before they'd ship the issue out? I mean, to me, doing it at that kind of late notice is just ridiculous. Doing the retroactive price hike, I think, is outrageous. But yeah, on March 26th, we got issue 18 of Hawkeye. And in the 23rd of April, it is not listed as being there, so presumably on the 30th. So I found out, we're recording this on Tuesday the 22nd, they would have to get word back from their customers at DCBS within a couple of days, because a week from now, they'd be shipping the stuff out, potentially. A little over, but still.
This is Dirty Pool, Marvel. Dirty Pool.
It's a really bad move to do on a title that is already, I think, floundering in terms of the court of public opinions. I think...
It's worth about $1.79 to me, an issue. And I don't know if it's worth much more.
Well, if they had done this before, right after the Pizza Dog issue, before it was late, shipping out order, fill-in issue, I'd have been, I'm not happy. But man, I'm loving the book. It's, I'll deal. But at this point, obviously I'm not going to cancel the order or whatever, but people who are buying off the rack, they may see that and say, maybe not. So
it'll probably be one of the few Marvel $2.99 books left. If it, anyway, wasn't it? There weren't a lot.
They still have a fair number. I haven't counted how many, but...
you can find out.
I do. I didn't think to load up my...
Superior Foes is a solid book at $2.99.
Well, hang on. I just loaded up my everything I'm getting and reviewing thing. And, actually, I do have prices on this. But Ms. Marvel is the only one this week. Wow, there are less than I was thinking.
And Superior Foes, man, it's
Avengers down. AI, Avengers Undercover, Nightcrawler, Thunderbolts. I mean, there's a number of them, but I think a diminishing number. But I don't think this was the right time to take Hawkeye and change it. I think that was just I don't want to say catastrophic move, but ill-conceived timing. Deadpool's another one.
Why not, it's unfathomable to me why they wouldn't just... change it in the next round of solicit. Okay, it's a $3.99 book. Thank you. Now we know.
Yep.
But you just can't go back and do that. That's not fair.
It's not fair, but apparently they can go back and do that. These are the sorts of shenanigans that led years ago to Brian Hibbs putting in a class action lawsuit against Marvel. They were breaking their own terms of sales. They set the rules. They flagrantly violated them. That's not a way to treat your business partners. And retailers are the business partners of publishers.
Because DCBS is a retailer, I would be sticking them with three Hawkeyes if I cancel my book. I want to send a message, but I don't want them to get stuck with three Hawkeyes that they will have to put on clearance and eat.
Yeah, it's unfair to the readers. It's unfair to the retailers. It is inexcusable of Marvel to have done so. If they wanted to raise the price on the next issue, fine.
Yeah, fine.
If they wanted to raise it on 21 even, it's like, I'm not happy about it, but hell, they could have just said, oops, we goofed, it should have been $3.99. But doing it on the issue that's just about to ship in another week or so, it's like, come on, that I don't know.
Are the books, do they have $3.99 written on them? Will they ship with $2.99 printed on the front?
I've got to imagine they're going to ship with $3.99. Who knows? That may even be how they noticed they had to send out the notice.
Oops. Yeah.
Somebody somewhere dropped the ball on this.
Yeah.
I don't know who, don't know how, don't know why, but it's unfortunate.
And but no big deal. We'll just pass along the problem to the consumer. They'll take it. They don't complain.
Have they not seen the internet?
They haven't listened to this podcast. Hawkeye related, anyway.
Well, I mean, again, if they'd done this a couple of months ago, it wouldn't have been a big a deal. But at this point, they've sufficiently burned off the goodwill, and that's a shame.
Yeah, I don't want them anymore. I'm mad. They got me riled up. I'm riled up.
Well, just to further on that, then, speaking of burning off goodwill, there was another one or two issues, specifically Trinity of Sin Pandora, number 10, that I'm holding off on because it seems like it takes place after Forever Evil, but I didn't get far enough in to know for sure. There was mention of the crime syndicate and stuff like that, and I'm like, you know, I'll just hold off. So I've got that, still the two issues of World's Finest, and Superman Wonder Woman, that's the prelude to Superman Doomed. I don't know if that's, if Superman Wonder Woman or Trinity of Sin Pandora, if those contain potential spoilers for the delayed Forever Evil 7 or not. If somebody knows, I'd appreciate finding out. Not what the spoilers are, obviously, I'm trying to avoid those, but what I can use as a trigger event saying, oh, this has happened, I can read this, then I can go read those, or there's no spoilers, I can go ahead and read them.
Are you going to have to keep these in the deep freeze until May?
I've got a comic book box top sitting right here that's getting increasingly full with yeah. I don't have to. I could just read them now, but it's kind of a no-win situation. It either spoils issues I've yet to read and has a lack of context, ruining potentially two stories, or I just hold off, get the story in the order it should have been sent out in, and then these issues kind of suffer because they've lacked story momentum because it took a while for me to get around to reading them because of the delays. There is no great outcome of this.
No, and that would be frustrating because how much of a tie-in is it? How much is it really contingent on what happened? Can I read this story, this comic that I've spent money on? Can I read it without being spoiled? Or do I have to wait until... When is Forever Evil 7 coming out now? May 15th? 20th? It's a while, right?
21st, I was thinking, but I've lost track.
Yeah, that's a long while, a long time to wait.
Good another couple of weeks, yeah.
Yeah.
Again, hop on the forum if people know. Let me know. There's a thread on DC delays and stuff. That was kind of what got me thinking on some of this. I mean, for me, the World's Finest was a no-brainer. I'm going to wait to that issue of Batman Superman ships, which I have no idea when that will be, actually, because... No, actually, I do. The week of the 23rd, so the next shipment will have that. That will free up those two issues. That helps a lot.
Yeah, I think I owe Brian Hitch an apology. I believe I confused him with David Finch, who was doing the Forever Evil art, and I thought Brian Hitch was also doing the Forever Evil art. And you know, it's really their fault for having names that are similar and not mine. But I will take the hit and say that I got you guys confused. And you know, it's not Hitch's fault, I guess, that Forever Evil is late. It's Finch's. Maybe.
Well, he's not doing the art. That's not to say he's not to blame. I doubt he is, but who knows? Strange things.
It's possible.
Fist fight at a convention? Who knows? I don't know. Now, Hitch is a great artist. Finch is a good artist, too. Hitch, though, has such a reputation at times of being late and delayed that it's so easy to believe that kind of a thing, even if he's not the artist on the book, which, again, funny, but I can't keep track of who's on which books. Hell, sometimes I look at the covers, I look at the solicits, I look at who actually did the work. None of those match. So, kind of crazy.
These delays are running rampant.
They are. And, again, some of them... if it's a week late, I really don't care. Granted, if it's on a weekly book, I do. But on some of these others, it's just, when am I going to see another issue? We're getting a lot of issue 30s of stuff, and we just got Justice League 29. So it's a month out of sequence from everything, you know? And that was actually the issue that launched, technically, I think, the month before everything else.
But, and what do you think about that new Grayson relaunch to replace Nightwing? Kind of strange.
I think DC is making a fundamental mistake relaunching books they've just ended. Even if they retitle them in the case of Grayson. Teen Titans, Suicide Squad, same sort of a deal. There is absolutely no evidence that a relaunch or renumbering in and of itself will increase sales. There's plenty of evidence to the contrary. Now, if you couple that with a major story change, a creative team change, or actually, I don't know, fixing what would be the perceived problems in the story content that are driving readers away, sure, that'll bump up sales. but I feel like there's a more focus on the window dressing, the title, the number on the book, than the content. And I am disappointed that DC is essentially following suit from Marvel.
Yeah, and I don't see the... I can see the appeal of the very short-term cash grab.
Well, and that's all it is. You get it for the first issue. By the third issue, particularly over at Marvel, and I took a deep dive on this recently. Again, that the numbers I was talking about earlier. First issue sells X amount. Second issue is going to be about 59% of that. Third issue is going to be about 50% of that first issue sales.
Yeah.
And typically, in a lot of these cases, the thing is just right back to where it was. In some cases, there is such a clear trend across volumes of a title, a downward trend, unfortunately, that, like with Ghost Rider, between a couple of volumes, there was a couple of year gap, but it just picked up almost right where it left off and kept falling. So, I mean, there's a certain amount of the title or the property is going to sell how the property is going to sell. Again, that having been said, you put the creative team of Hush on Batman, boom, it jumps over where it was selling, you take them off, boom, right back to where it was. There are some people who follow creators, some who just follow the characters.
The alternative for DC was the Green Arrow model, where it's broken, let's bring Jeff Lemire in, let's relaunch it within its numbering, let's try to make a big deal about that, relaunch it that way, and the book is creatively better, critically well-received, but sales are not noticeably improved, I don't believe. Look at that. I don't know that off the top of my head, and I sprung it on you. But that's the preferred way we would like them to...
So I've gotten used to you springing these sorts of things, so I'm pulling up a chart now.
It's selling, 24,000 last month? And that...
It reset the clock. Essentially, it acted as if it were a new number one. If it were an actual new number one, maybe it would have gone a little higher on that first issue, but there's no real evidence.
Right, and but this is the way we as collectors, readers, fans of this genre, we would prefer they do it the Green Arrow way. Bring in a new creator, relaunch it within its own structure, don't renumber it, don't do any of that stuff, and just kind of fix the problems and move forward. And yet, it didn't pay off from sales, and they lost out on that cash grab money from renumbering. So
well, they
you
lost
can
it
see
out,
why they do it.
They lost it out on their Batwing, Superboy, a few other titles. I see why they do it. It doesn't work. And over at Marvel, because they've been doing it so often over the last few years, including a couple of titles relaunching multiple times in the last few years, they have had only one title in 2014 that launched over 90K. Now, granted, Amazing Spider-Man, yeah, that'll shoot through the roof. But the point of the matter is they've gone to the well too many times. They've essentially poisoned the well in terms of it's no longer as successful a tactic as it used to be. And all the evidence seems to indicate if you just kept the numbering the same, you would have done, okay, maybe not as well on the first issue, but pretty much exactly the same, I think, on the others. Now, where this comes in is elsewhere in terms of the long term and specifically, I think, in terms of digital. I've got a coworker who got the Marvel Digital Unlimited stuff, the Digital Comics Unlimited. That's it, DCU for Marvel. I gotta love that acronym. And he was wanting recommendations. Drew, suppose I have just seen Captain America the Winter Soldier, which I did over the weekend.
All right.
Though I don't know what the comic book basis is, what should I read to go see what that movie was based on?
The Brubaker stuff, right?
What issues are those? What title? Give me a title and issue numbers.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. You have to go to Comic Book DB for that.
Well, it turns out...
And then good luck.
You want the first... You want to start with the first issue of the fifth volume. That's where the Out of Time, or was the Out of Time or the Enemy, one of the two storylines by Brubaker. Now, if you're off by a volume, it's also still a number one of Captain America by Brubaker, so not as obvious if you've gotten it wrong. If you're off
a
volume earlier, you've got a another thing. It's making recommending comics increasingly challenging. You almost have to mention the title, the issue number, the volume, the creative team, the story arc name, and enough about it to let the person know if they got the right thing or not. To recommend to a casual comic book reader. Here's an opportunity to take somebody and turn them into a more of a comic book fan. And they're making it harder to do. That's foolish.
But there is potential to fix that. Amazon might be able to do something there, right? We don't know.
The bell has already been rung. You can't unring this bell. It's still always going to be confusing to point people to which issue of which volume of half a million of the different, or half a dozen at least, of the Marvel titles. You know, at Comic-Con last year, the discussion around the relaunch, or maybe it was year before, of Captain America was more around which volume it was going to be than what the story was about or who the creator was. Literally, it was a bunch of comic geeks. Is this volume 6 or 7? That's the wrong thing to have people talking about. You know, the creators and the publishers should want us talking about the content, not the packaging. But
They'll have to do it with trades then. You know, they'll just have to do it with their trades, and they'll have to have their trades positioned in such a way that they can capitalize on casual readers coming in, because they're not going to be able to do it with back issues.
The next time you
it's too hard.
The next time you walk into a bookstore or comic book store that has a large selection of trades, or even go to Amazon.com so you can play at home. Tell me who the creative team was on the first volume of the Daredevil trade paperbacks. Which volume one of Daredevil trade paperback? There's a billion of them. And that title hasn't even rotated as often as some of the other titles. So it's... I don't know how this problem can be solved.
So you cannot be a casual fan, right? You just that proves your point. You cannot be a casual comic book fan.
Obviously, I can't be, but I think it's impossible for most people to be. But I'll admit I'm an anomaly in this sort of situation. So
I mean, what they would love to... I'm sure what they want to have happen is, you see the movie, you walk into the comic shop, give me all the Falcon stuff, you know? I want to follow along the... But I just read. I want to capitalize on it. I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really not easy. It's just not easy.
You should be able to walk out of the movie, being able to walk into a bookstore, comic store, go to Amazon.com, and easily find, I want to follow Falcon. I want to follow Captain America. I want to follow the Winter Soldier. I want to follow Black Widow, Nick Fury, whoever. But that's part of why we don't see sales bumps from the movies, is there's no clear recipient issue, trade, or title to get the bump. Anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
Yeah, I'm depressed.
Sorry. We started talking about the numbers, and that happens. You know, it's...
That'll do it for me, man.
All right, cool. Join us next week for Secret Origins number 1 from DC, Elektra number 1 from Marvel, and Walking Dead number 126 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.